38 years. Can you imagine lying beside a pool of water, hoping you can get in quickly in order to have healing for 38 years? Can you remember what you were doing 38 years ago? I was a fit 30-something then, a long time ago. I vaguely remember. Actually, I keep a diary of all my foreign trips, and it just so happens that April 1978 was the first time I went to Nepal, of which more later. My first trip to Nepal was 38 years ago this year. Show you how life has changed. In those days, it was virtually impossible to have a direct flight into the country because it was prohibitively expensive. And all our Interserve people — Interserve is the organization that Sally and Yogya work with, and we'll be hearing more about somebody who's off to Nepal very shortly, later on. But I worked with Interserve for all those years. We couldn't afford to fly directly into the country, and the way we did it, and the way I did it in 1978 and several times afterwards, was to fly with Syrian Arab Airlines. They don't even exist anymore. We changed planes in Damascus. Golly, you wouldn't do that nowadays, would you? And flew to Delhi, and then went by train from Delhi to Gorakhpur, and then overland in a rickety old Nepali bus up to Tansen, which is the big hospital in that part of the country, one of the four regional hospitals that Interserve was running. Ishbel, would you mind coming out here a moment, please? That's very kind. It's a very simple job. Would you just carry that suitcase over to the Shell garage? Over there? Is that okay?
It's rather heavy.
Really? Okay, thank you very much. I won't really... This case is actually really rather heavy. I took with me on that trip a case that was actually bigger than that. It was a Globetrotter case that has died the death long since. And it was full of medical equipment for Tansen Hospital. And all my own personal possessions were just in a rucksack that I took as hand luggage. But we managed to get a seat on the bus travelling up to Tansen. I shared a little tiny two-seater thing with a Nepali farmer. He also had his goat and his chickens with him. And although the goat had its legs tied, it could still kick quite hard. We arrived in Tansen, and the bus station is down at the bottom of the valley. The hospital is quite a way higher. And I was told to look for a porter to carry the case. I wasn't going to make Ishbel do it at that time. And there were a lot of fit Nepali men who were very keen to carry my case. But Bill Gould, who was the hospital superintendent — I mention the name because Bill and his wife lived in this parish for 4 months. A few years later, some of you will have met them. He was the medical superintendent at Tansen in those days. And Bill said, "No, Alistair, let me sort this out." And he chose to carry this case, which was really heavy. Syrian Arab Airlines didn't worry about weight on their planes. He chose a little old lady, not like Ishbel, much older than Ishbel, but a little old lady who appeared to be more than twice my age. And I thought, oh, I can't, as a fit 30-year-old, 30-something-year-old, allow this person to carry my case. But as soon as we selected her to do it, she beamed with pleasure and produced some rope somewhere in all her garments, and tied the rope round the case and put it on her back with the weight on her head, a loop, as you've seen people carry it up there, and we staggered up the hill to the hospital. And I thought, golly. And Bill said, "Alistair, what you've got to learn in Nepal is the need for tough love. That lady is a widow. She has no family. In Nepal, then as now, there's no social security, there's no unemployment benefit, there's no NHS. Because we let her carry your case up the hill, she will eat for 2 days. The money that you have paid her, or you're going to pay her, will keep her going for 2 days. As it happened, next day we had a Bible study in the hospital. They had two Bible studies every morning, one in English and one for farm people in Nepali. And a Nepali member of staff led the Bible study, and it was actually on this passage from John 5. I remember it well. And I remember the Nepali administrator, as he was, said, you know, I think the most unhappy verses in the whole of Scripture are in that passage from John 5. Did you hear what the man said when Jesus spoke to him? He said, I have no one to help me. I have no one to help me. And this Nepali leader said, it is absolute nonsense to suggest, as is sometimes done, that Jesus only helps those who have faith in him. This man had no faith in Jesus at the time he was, didn't even know who Jesus was. And I believe, and certainly that Nepali leader believed, that the reason John puts this story into his gospel, this miracle by Jesus, he wanted to remind us that Jesus helps those who have no one to help them, who are without help. We're in this series about the paraclete, and Jesus was the ultimate paraclete, the man who came alongside to help, the man who had no one else to help him. Later, there was faith. That's later on in the story. But at that time, there was not. I think the most wonderful verse in any hymn I know is that verse, that line which says, love to the loveless shown, that they might lovely be. That's ultimate paraclete, paraclesis. Jesus helps those who have no one else to help them, and we should do the same.